Information, please. Presented each week at this time by Canada Dry, famous the world over for its fine beverages. Wake up, America. Time to stump the experts and enjoy a cool, refreshing glass of Canada Dry ginger ale. Every week at this time, Canada Dry sets up a board of four brilliant brains for you to throw questions at. You may submit from 1 to 3 original questions with the correct answers. For every question our quartet fails to answer, the sender gets $10 with the compliments of Canada Dry. For every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $5. So you can make $15 if our experts miss out, which they occasionally do. Our editorial staff may reword your question a trifle. Don't worry about it. Whenever there is a duplication of questions, Information Please uses the one that was submitted first. All questions become the property of Information Please and should be addressed to Canada Dry, 1 Pershing Square, New York City. And now may I present our master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Mr. Fadiman.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we would like to repeat that Information Please is a completely unrehearsed and spontaneous program. That means that these questions haven't been seen in advance by any of the experts, whom I'd like to introduce to you now. First, we have Franklin P. Adams, perhaps better known as FPA, conductor of the brilliant humorous column, The Conning Tower, running in the New York Post. His sidekick, John Curran, is no less celebrated as sports authority and universal fount of knowledge. Our two guests of honor this evening are the genial literateur Christopher Morley, whose new novel, Kitty Foyle, is on the point of making its appearance. By the way, Mr. Morley, I have now read 101 pages of it, and it's very good. Is it all right after that?
As far as I remember.
Well, we'll see. And with Mr. Morley this evening is appearing John T. Flynn, author of the biography of Rockefeller, God's Gold, and whose words of wisdom on economics and allied subjects are read by millions in the New York World Telegram and other papers. Now remember, for each question that these gentlemen miss, Counter Dry rings up $10. And that's paid out to the sender, plus $5 for the use of the question. That all clear? Here we go. The first question, coming from R.C. Story of Des Moines, Iowa, is this. Name 5 flowers that are contained in the titles of literary works. For example, A.B.'s Irish Rose would be one. You may not use that one, gentlemen. Mr. Morley.
The Scarlet Pimpernel.
The Scarlet Pimpernel by Baroness Orczy. Very good indeed. Mr. Adams.
Rose in Bloom by Louisa M. Alcott.
Very good. Yes, Rose in Bloom. That gives us 2. Have a few more. Mr. Flynn.
Red Lily, Anatole France.
Very good for an economist, Mr. Flynn. Very good. That's 3. Don't let me deter you, gentlemen, if I name... How about Mrs. Astor's horse? There's one. Mrs. Astor's horse, Mr. Curran.
Lady Rose's daughter.
I beg pardon?
Lady Rose's daughter.
Who wrote it?
Mrs. Humphrey Ward.
That was Mr. Adams chiming in. Of course, between those two, Mr. Adams and Mr. Curran, they can beat me down. That makes 4. Let's have one more. One more.
Leaves of grass.
Yes, just possibly. I think, would grass be called a flower, Mr. Curran?
Grass has a flower.
Is it all right then to let that go?
Yes, sir.
You've been saved by Mr. Curran, Mr. Morley. Very good. Those are 5. One might name Daisy Miller by Henry James. Did we mention So Red the Rose by Stark Young, which was a bestseller a couple of years ago? Poppy, in which W.C. Fields starred. One might name many others. Dr. Harry Laidler, by the way, he's sort of colleague of yours, Mr. Flynn. He, too, is an economist.
Is he asking for information on economics?
Yes. By the way, what is an economist, Mr. Flynn? I've always wanted to know.
God knows. Ask him.
Well, I'll refer the question to him. Economics. Economics, you know, Mr. Flynn, has been called the dismal science. Do you know who called it that, Mr. Flynn, by the way?
No, I haven't the same idea.
About time you learned that. Mr. Thomas Carlyle, I think, called economics, your subject, the dismal science. Now, I'm going to name a group of economists who seem to have avoided the so-called dismal effects of your profession, Mr. Flynn. And I want you to identify these very famous economists. The first is one who writes humorous books. Who would that be? Mr. Flynn.
Stephen Leacock.
Stephen Leacock. That's quite right. The famous Canadian humorist and economist. Now, this second economist, a very famous one, too, married a Russian ballet dancer. Mr. Morley.
John Maynard Keynes.
Very good, Mr. Morley. Do you know who the dancer was? And he married?
Lopakova.
Yes, Lydia Lopakova. And who was Mr. Kane? Who is Mr. Kane? Morley, could you identify him?
He used to be a don at Cambridge. I don't know whether he still is.
Don't know whether he still is either. What's his most famous book? Mr. Slim.
Theory of Money, or you might call it The Economic Consequences of the Peace.
Yes, it was a great bestseller right after the Versailles Treaty, I think.
His most famous book is The Theory of Money.
The most famous to you, you mean, but not to us folks who probably wouldn't be able to understand it.
No, nobody understands it yet.
Oh, I'm glad to know that. Nice to have your profession be spoken so nicely. One who writes successful detective stories. Who would that be? An economist who writes successful detective stories. Mr. Morley.
G.D.H. Cole.
That's very good.
And Mrs. Cole.
And Mrs. Cole, yes. And this one is the last. One who became the father of two children after reaching the age of 80. Mr. Flynn.
Professor Richard Ely.
Professor Richard Ely, yes. A very famous economist who, among his students, were Woodrow Wilson and Newton D. Baker. Matter of fact, not only did he become the father of two children after reaching the age of 80, but the Columbia Encyclopedia tells me that he's credited with fathering much of Wisconsin's legislation of the father era. It's going to be all right on our economists. The third question, coming from Beulah Guterman of Flushing, Long Island, is one about Shakespeare. About whom are the following lines from Shakespeare spoken, and who speaks them? The first is, why, man, he doth bestride the narrow world like a colossus. Kieran had his hand up first. Mr. Morley and Mr. Flynn had their hands up, too.
It is spoken of Julius Caesar by Cassius.
That's very good.
Talking to Brutus and trying to persuade him successfully to join the conspiracy.
That's very neat, Mr. Kieran, very neat. By the way, what is a colossus?
A colossus originally was a great brass or bronze statue, I believe, reared across the narrow gateway to the entrance of Rhodes.
Very good.
And the ships passed underneath it and was known as the Colossus of Rhodes.
Is that right?
It was more than a statue, I think. It was a lighthouse, wasn't it, John?
Well, I didn't see, it wasn't lighted when I passed out there.
Here is another set of lines from Shakespeare. Who says them, and about whom are they said? Yet do I fear thy nature. It is too full of the milk of human kindness to catch the nearest way. Mr. Kieran had his hand up. Seems to me I've seen your hand
up. That is Lady Macbeth speaking to her husband.
Yes, that's quite right. Then must you speak of one that loved not wisely, but too well. Mr. Flynn.
Othello.
About whom...
Thinking about himself.
Yes, Othello about Othello. It's his last speech in the last scene, just before he shuffles off this mortal coil. 3 out of 3, and we don't seem to have stumped the experts. And I should like, by the way, if I may, Mr. Flynn, to compliment you on your knowledge of Shakespeare and other subjects that have nothing to do with economics. Are you an escapist from economics?
Yes.
Mrs. Miriam Miller of Brooklyn, New York, sends him the following, it seems to me, very interesting question. Why can't any one of the following 3 people become president of the United States as a result of the election of 1940, the next election? Now, the 3 people are Senator Robert F. Wagner of New York State, Charles Lindbergh, and Anne Sheridan. Why can't any of those 3 become president? Mr. Flynn, you had your hand up first. Senator Wagner first.
He's born in Germany. He's not a Native American.
Yes, and no person who is not a natural-born citizen may be eligible. Now, Charles Lindbergh, Mr. Morley.
He has not lived continuously in the United States long enough.
Before the election. That's quite correct. He lived for a time in what country, Mr. Morley?
In the Channel Islands and in England and in France.
That's right. The Constitution provides that the president must be a resident of the United States 14 years previous to election, which is tough on Mr. Lindbergh. Now, the third and last, Anne Sheridan. Anne Sheridan, gentlemen. Why cannot Anne Sheridan become president, Mr. Adams?
She would be too young.
She would be too young. That's quite right. That
was just a graceful guess.
I hope Miss Sheridan is listening. Miss Sheridan, you've made a new friend. She is under what age? What age do you have to be to become president, Mr. Adams?
21.
No, to become president.
35.
35, yes, that's quite right. So that we cannot have a Sheridan for president movement until 1950. 1950. Boys are very good this evening. J. Bernard of Brooklyn sends in the following. What is each of these? The Habsburg lip, Spanish beard, and English foot. First, the Habsburg lip is what? Mr. Morley.
Well, it was a bulging and sort of corrugated, outward curling lower lip that was supposed to be hereditary in the Habsburg lineage.
Yes, that's quite right. And what famous Habsburg recently has a Habsburg?
The King of Spain.
Yes, the ex-King of Spain, to be precise. Spanish beard would be what? Spanish beard. Mr. Kieran?
Well, if nobody wants it, I'll take a guess that it sounds like something botanical.
Go ahead. You're all right.
Well, would that be what's called Spanish moss?
Yes. That's the kind of...
Well, who gave it that name?
Well, I just gave it that name, Mr. Kieran. That's all.
I think old man's beard is what it's always called.
I beg pardon?
Old man's beard.
Is that really what it's
botanists
called?
Botanists call it.
I think it's called a mustache, Mr. Morley.
Well, the correct name for it in English is air moss, and it is not parasitic, as most people believe. Now, go on with the story.
I left you at the last station, Mr. Kieran. English foot. English foot? Mr. Kieran.
Take a chance again. An English foot is one-third of that brass rod that is stuck over there in the British Museum to measure the official length of a British yard.
Yes, and it is how many inches?
12 inches.
Yes.
Not the British Museum, the Greenwich Observatory.
That's
surely.
Right, Mr. Morley.
Thank you, Mr. Morley. Say, Mr. Kieran, do you like having Mr. Morley doing this to you?
Accept it as amended. Yes. I always like to learn.
12 inches. An English foot is 12 inches. All right. Mrs. M.A. Armstrong at the Hotel White of this city has worked up a question which has tested your knowledge of biblical characters, characters from the Old Testament. What famous work of literature might you dedicate to each of the following biblical characters? For example, if I should say Methuselah, you might reply immediately, Old Mortality. Wouldn't you, gentlemen?
No, I wouldn't.
Old Man River.
Old Man River. All right. In that case, see what you can do with the following. What work of literature would you dedicate to Lot's wife? You remember Lottie, don't you, Mr. Flynn? Lot's wife, Mr. Adams?
Salt by Charles G. Norris.
Yes, very good. A salt cellar. That's salt cellar. And what other one might you... Mr. Morley, had you another one in mind?
No.
Famous economic treatise, semi-economic treatise, Mr. Flynn.
Looking Backwards.
Yes, by Edward Bellamy, Looking Backwards. Or Edith Wharton's Book of Memoirs. Remember those, Mr. Morley? A Backward Glance, charming book of about a year or two ago, something like that. What would you dedicate to Delilah? Miss Flynn.
Ring Lardner's short story, Haircut.
Very good, Mr. Flynn. Very good. And you an authority on economics. Mr. Kieran, do you have another one in mind?
No.
Mr.
The Decay of Lying by Oscar Wilde, wasn't it? Or was it Max Beerbohm?
I don't remember. You've got me there. I'd accept either one.
Oscar Wilde.
Or The Rape of the Lock by Pope would be another. How about Pharaoh's Daughter? Pharaoh's Daughter. What might you dedicate to her? That's a tough one, I think. Miss Adams.
Old Man River.
Old Man River is very good, very good. The Finding of Little Moses in the bulrushes by the River Nile. I think of any other. Kingsley's Water Babies, maybe. Or Max Miller's bestseller of some years ago called what, Mr. Adams, remember?
I Cover the Waterfront.
Very good, Mr. Morley. Thank you. Cover the Waterfront. That gives us Lot's wife, Delilah, and Pharaoh's daughter, all with very apt dedications. Finally, Eve. A nice dedication to the mother of us all, gentlemen. Eve. Mr. Morley?
In the beginning.
In the, what book that was that?
I think Mrs. E-D-E-N, appropriately.
Southworth. Yes, very possibly. I wouldn't dare contradict you. Think of another one, Mr. Adams?
Adam's Diary by Mark Twain.
Very good. Yes. She would have loved to see it, no doubt. Now, think of any others? Wasn't there a play called First Lady some years ago, I think? The Garden Party by Catherine Mansfield, maybe? Some fun, this is.
Old Man River.
Old Man River again? All right, if you must.
River.
Well, we don't seem to be able to stop these gentlemen for even a loss of $10. And while the experts are girding their loins for further combat, let's listen, shall we, to Mr. Milton Cross.
Thank you, Mr. Paterman. All our Saturdays now are cheering and pennant-waving Saturdays. There's an added tension in the bracing fall air as the eager crowds jam the stadium to watch husky young men give what is romantically called their all for the alma mater. And from these animated masses of sports lovers, I draw my parallel. Sparkling Canada Dry water is every bit as lively and exciting as a football crowd. Millions of extra bubbles jam each bottle. These are the energetic agents which keep your drink full of life and spirit for a good long time. This is the amazing Canada Dry Pinpoint Carbonation, which keeps the club soda sparkling for as long as 24 hours after the bottle has been opened. That's why happy winners and good losers everywhere assemble after the game and call for Canada Dry. And that's why you should always specify the most active and energetic club soda of all. Ask for sparkling Canada Dry water.
Mr. Cross, your sprightly advice was timed in precisely 68 seconds. Now, the next question, coming from P. Hill of Boston, Massachusetts, is one about various economic schemes that have been offered to us in the last few years, since 1929. Since that date, what economic schemes have promised people the following annual income? The first annual income is $1,560, the second, $2,400, the third, $5,000, going up, and the fourth and last, $20,000 per year. What economic scheme first promised people $1,560? Mr. Adams.
$30 a week.
Very good. The $30 every Thursday, old age pension.
Anybody can figure that, but can divide.
Apparently, Mr. Flynn, Mr. Morley, and Mr. Kieran were not as apt as you in long debate.
Or so thick.
Do you remember who was elected on the basis of the $30 every Thursday scheme, or I think it helped do his election, Mr. Flynn?
Mr. Downey, Senator of California.
Yes, Senator Sheridan Downey of California. Now, $2,400 a year. Gets to be more of a cheerful question.
That's the Townsend plan. $200 a month.
$200 a month.
Another case of division.
Yes.
That's multiplication, that one.
Of course, you have to live how long to get the $200 per month?
Well, they keep reducing that. They started with 65, and they've got down to 60 now.
Not bad, is it?
No.
No, not bad.
We'll soon be able to get it ourselves, John Kieran and myself here.
$5,000 per annum. Mr. Flint.
Well, if I'll take a guess at that. That sounds like Huey Long, every man a king.
That's right. Every man a king at $5,000 per
year.
That's right. Share the wealth plan. And finally, $20,000, which is the one that really interests me, Mr. Flint.
That was Howard Scott and Technocracy.
Yes, what ever happened to Howard Scott
and
Technocracy?
I don't know. I haven't the faintest idea. And I don't, what happened to the $20,000?
I wonder what did happen to it. And then, of course, there is the famous information, please, revolving pension scheme, by which Canada Dry offers you $5 for every question you send in, ladies and gentlemen, and $10 for every question month. The next question from M. Keene of Berkeley, California. By what descriptive names are the following commonly known? For example, Hank Morgan is known as, you know, I'm going to give you this free. It's the real name of the Connecticut Yankee in Mark Twain's famous book, Hank Morgan. Now, Tom Canty, C-A-N-T-Y. Mr. Adams had his hand up at once.
In The Prince and the Pauper.
Which is he?
He was the pauper.
Very right. That's quite right. Mark Twain's The Prince and the Pauper. The pauper was known as Tom Canty. It takes quite a memory to know that, Mr. Adams. Quite a memory, if I may
say. I have quite a memory.
Indeed you have. Indeed you have. Percival William Williams. Percival William Williams is known as Mr. Morley.
Wee Willie Winkie.
And who is Wee Willie Winkie?
He's the hero of a story by Rudyard Kipling.
Yes, and the story is called?
Wee Willie Winkie.
There you go. Thank you very much. Robert Fitzooth, O-O-T-H, the Earl of Huntington. This is not so easy. Robert Fitzooth, the Earl of Huntington. Mr. Morley again. Doesn't faze him.
Wasn't he? Yes, it does. It feezes me.
but I think he was one of Robin Hood's gang, wasn't he?
I wish you'd stop that after the first three words. He was Robin Hood.
Well, he was Robin
he
Hood?
He was Robin Hood, yes. Did you mean that, Mr. Morley? Sorry. He was Robin Hood, later known as Robert Fitzhugh, the Earl of Huntington. Now, we were supposed to get an exact 3 out of 3 on that. And therefore, I shall have to award $10, courtesy of Canada Dry, to Mr. Keene of Boston, California. Thank you. Now, gentlemen, I shall ask you to listen carefully to the next question, coming to us from Robert E. Nickerson of Columbia, New York. Columbia University, I imagine. The following paragraph has been extracted from a book on economics. I'm going to ask you to do only one thing, two things, rather. First, listen to the paragraph, and second, identify the author. Does that seem easy so far, Mr. Flynn? No?
That's both all right. Phases and seasons.
All right. Here's the paragraph. Quote, but what does all this signify?
If we are getting restless under the taxonomy of a monocotyledonous wage doctrine and a cryptogamic theory of interest, stop me if you've heard this one, by the way, Mr. Flint, with involute, loculicidal, tomentous, and moniliform variants, what is the cytoplasm, centrosome, or karyokinetic process to which we may turn, comma, and in which we may find surcease from the metaphysics of normality and controlling principles? That's question, by the way. Close the quote. Mr. Morley.
I should say the famous analysis of the woolen mitten industry by Bob Benchley.
Well, I think that would be no clearer than this is, Mr. Morley. Mr. Curran.
Would you mind just starting that again?
Oh.
No.
Just the first line.
Just the first line, but what does all this signify is the first line. If that gives you a hint, you're brighter even than I thought you were, Mr. Curran. Do you want to guess as to the author of that momentous sentence?
Shakespeare.
Well, we have Mr. Benchley and Mr. Shakespeare. Mr. Adams?
Sounds like Burt Williams.
Bert Williams, Shakespeare.
All them big words.
It's a good team.
Maybe it was Bugs Baird.
Sounds like it, doesn't it, Mr.
John
Flynn?
T. Flynn.
Oh, no. No, Mr. Flynn writes with deceptive clarity.
Well, he's the only economist I know well.
The
it can't be Nicholas Murray Butler, can it?
No, no, it is Nicholas Murray Butler either. Although the question does come from Columbia University. It might perhaps have been thought up by one of his students. The quotation is from a very famous American economist who Mr. Flynn, I know, has read, and perhaps all of you have read, Thorsten Veblen. And you'll find it on page 70 of a book called The Place of Science in Modern Civilization.
I won't, for one.
That let you out, Mr. Adams. Well, Mr. Nickerson, who has read that book, is entitled, I think, to $10, courtesy of Canada Dry. The next question from Mrs. Virginia Hall of San Anselmo, California. Some of the most famous encounters in literature, gentlemen, were not fought with guns. Name the fight, or the encounter, rather, in which each of the following weapons was used. The first weapon is the quarterstaff. What famous fight was that involved with? Mr. Kieran, I think, had his hand up first. Mr. Morley had his hand up, too.
Little John... And Ivanhoe fought with Squire Girth, Ivanhoe's squire.
Friar Tuck.
I think you're both wrong.
No, it wasn't Friar Tuck.
Maybe I'm wrong, too. Wasn't it the first fight that Robin Hood himself and Little John had, after which they became friends?
Well, I think Little John also fought with Girth.
It's very possible, Mr. Kieran. You overawe me. I'm going to call that correct, because I think that there were a number of fights in Ivanhoe which were fought with quarterstaffs. Mr. Kieran, do you have any, can you enlighten
us further? In Ivanhoe, Locksley wants to let Girth go free because he's the squire of the disinherited knight, and the miller said, what, is he going to be let go without paying a toll? And
sure,
then they say, miller, beware thy toll dish, when Girth hauls off to hit him a good swipe, which he does.
Mr. Adams, wouldn't you think he just
read it? And he says, my grandsire drew a good bow at Hastings.
Goodness.
And he says, the foul fiend on thy grandsire and all his generation, unquote.
Thank you very much, Mr. Adams. All right. What weapon, or rather, in what encounter in literature, was the snickersnee used? The snickersnee. You know the snickersnee. Mr. Morley had his hand up. So did all the others, by the way. Mr. Morley?
The bandersnatch and the... Gorgon, whatever his name was, in Alice Through the Looking Glass.
Don't think it was a snickersnee. Now, if it is, I'm going to apologize next time I see you, Mr. Morley, but I don't think that is the right answer.
Also Gilbert and Sullivan.
It's very possible. Mr. Adams, do you have another answer?
Mikado.
Yes. Can you enlighten us a little further?
I drew my snickersnee.
Well, it's what are the circumstances? Where was it used?
It's the song sung to the Mikado about the... putative murder of his son.
Yes, the execution of his son. You remember how it goes. Snicker, snee, live or die, survive or perish. I am for the Constitution, Mr. Adams.
I never thought of that. That's pretty good.
That is pretty good, isn't it? Eshabook. A weapon used in what famous encounter? Mr. Kieran had his hand up.
In a battle between Ivan Petrovsky, Skovar, and Abdullah Bulbul Amir.
Very right. That's quite right. We were supposed to get 2 out of 3 on that. And we did. The following question, coming to us from M. Davis of Baltimore, Maryland, tests your knowledge of the Sherlock Holmes story. Where did Sherlock Holmes keep his tobacco? Mr. Morley.
In the toe of a Persian slipper.
Very good. That's perfectly correct and accurate. How long is it since you've read those stories, Mr. Morley? Long time?
About a year.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good. Who were the Baker Street Irregulars? Who were the Baker Street Irregulars?
I was a band of ragamuffins, boys along the street that he hired to bring in odd bits of information, which they did.
That's quite right. How long is it since you've read Sherlock Holmes?
30 years.
30 years. I hope you're properly ashamed of yourself.
I am. I mean,
no,
in my way.
Sure. Oh. How did Holmes know by looking at a watch that Dr. Watson had a brother of untidy habits? Mr. Morton.
There were a lot of scratches around the hole where the watch was supposed to be wound with a key, from which he deduced that Dr. Watson's brother had a crapulous constitution.
A what constitution?
It means he drank too much.
All right. And how did he know by looking at the watch that Dr. Watson's brother was frequently broke and only occasionally flush?
Because
Morley again.
Beg your pardon. The pawn of the dates scratched on it by the pawnbroker came at fairly regular intervals.
That's quite right. Thank you very much. Apparently it's impossible to break you down on Sherlock Holmes, Mr. Morley. Now a final tabulation reveals that Canada Dry has paid out a total of $20 to our expert Stump E. Mr. Cross, a word from you, and then I'll be back with our lineup for next week.
2 weeks ago, we told you that Canada Dry Ginger Ale was the ideal beverage with late snacks. Since that time, we've had lots of letters from people who have agreed. But as one mother puts it, we omitted some important members of the family, the children. Why not, she writes, tell what a swell beverage Canada Dry is for the children, particularly after school, to quiet ravishing appetites and yet not spoil their evening meals. Well, that's an excellent idea. For we all know children love ginger ale. And Canada Dry is the world's finest, just as pure and wholesome as modern science can make it. So after school, have Canada Dry ready. And let the children have all they want. It's good for them. And mothers, why don't you join the children in this refreshing treat? It's a delightful way to beat mid-afternoon fatigue. For it picks you up, refreshes inwardly, or in a word, it's gingivating. Now, here's Mr. Fadiman with news of our next week's program.
Mr. Morley and Mr. Flynn, will you please accept Canada Dry's thanks for coming to the aid of the party this evening? Next week, our triple threat combination, Mr. Kieran, Mr. Levant, and Mr. Adams, will be ready and willing and, we hope, able. As our guest of honor, we announce the return engagement of a gentleman who is a most learned authority in half a dozen different fields, but is perhaps better known to millions of Americans as a catcher for the Boston Red Sox, Mr. Mo Bird. To all our listeners, we say, please send your questions along. If you have a stumper to stump our board of experts, let's have it. There are $5 in it for you if we use your question, and another $10 if we fail to answer it correctly. So you can win $15 in all. Send your letters with questions and the correct answers to Information, Please, 1 Pershing Square, New York City.
Remember, Canada Dry Ginger Ale, Sparkling Water, Tom Collins Mixer, and Lime Ricky come in convenient sizes. Why don't you check your supply right away? The large family size is economical, costing only 15 cents plus bottle deposit. This is Milton Cross saying goodnight for Canada Dry until next week at this time.